to the Upcycle Canada podcast. I'm Jennifer, and together with my husband Dave, we started with an idea, worked on it as a side hustle, and grew it into our first eco-friendly store. At Upcycle Canada, we repurpose, refinish, and reuse discarded items, giving them new life. Sit in on the conversation as we continue to grow from a small side hustle into something much more. Special guests will drop by and share their journey with you as well. This is the most eco-friendly small business podcast in your favorites. This is Upcycle Canada, where yesterday's items are reborn. Let's do this.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Upcycle Canada podcast. My guest today is from Canada. Yay! That's so awesome. I have another Canadian on the podcast. And coming to us from the home of maybe the origin story of a very popular yellow bear, which I have from when I was a child upstairs. My guest is here to join us today and talk about how we can live an intentional life, how we don't just minimize once, but we're doing something special in our home to live a clutter-free life, and that really fits with what we talk about here on Upcycle Canada. So welcome, Suzanne, to the podcast. Glad to have you here.
Thank you, Dave. It's so nice to be here.
Awesome. Okay, so you are in Winnipeg, right?
Yeah. Just outside, yeah.
Just outside Winnipeg, okay. Yeah. And the story of our favorite little bear, Winnie the Pooh, it starts with a soldier, I believe, here in Canada. Can you kind of fill in the blanks for anybody who's like, really, Winnipeg? That makes sense.
Yeah, just a little bit. It's a Canadian soldier who happened to come across this abandoned bear cub that was being sold somewhere along the way of his travels. And so he bought this bear and he named it Winnie after Winnipeg. Because that's where the soldier was originally from.
There you go. So if you didn't know that part of the story, there you go. You just got some information for your next trivia night. You can blow people away. So there you go. Awesome. So yeah, and I'm over here in Ontario, Canada. So it's always great to have another Canadian on the podcast. We joked today that it's like more than two digits outside. So it's great. You can actually go outside now. And again, you have to do the math for US listeners, but it's actually getting warmer. Let's just put it that way. So it's April and there's less snow and it's getting a little warmer. We can actually open the windows during the day, which is nice. Get some fresh air in the house.
So, that's right. Yeah. Excellent. I'm getting air out the winter.
Okay. So Suzanne, you are on a mission to help people. We're going to talk about something that's going to be coming up in May. We're going to actually do a virtual thing, which I'm really excited to talk about that. But you're all about intentional living. You're all about minimizing, but there's levels of that as well. And when we talked earlier, you talked a little bit about something that you do at Christmas, which I thought was a stupendous idea. So talk a little bit about your journey and where this all started for you as it relates to our eco-friendly listeners. What is it that you do and who do you help?
Right. Okay. Well, my original journey, I kind of have two starts to my journey. One was about 5 years ago. I was super curious about this new documentary that landed on Netflix called The Minimalists. And I watched that and was sold instantly on their idea of a minimalist lifestyle. What I loved about it, what they had to say was it, kind of opens your eyes that minimalism isn't just one thing. It's on a spectrum. I always kind of joke that there's the people that live with 15 items in a backpack. That's not the minimalism that I'm talking about. I live in a house. I don't live in a tiny house. I live in an average home. But it was the idea of letting the things go that just take up too much space in our homes and feeling like you have space to breathe. That's one of the biggest things that I've noticed, one of the biggest benefits that I've noticed is having a space to breathe in my home, and that the stuff in my home even has space to breathe. You actually get to see it all, appreciate what's here because it's not all cluttered and jumbled together. So I spent roughly the last 5 years kind of developing a habit, first kind of doing challenges 30-day challenges and whatnot to eliminate stuff from my home. But at this point now, I've gone through my home several times. So at this point now, it's really I just have a box by my entrance. And if I find something that we don't need anymore, it goes in the box. And when the box is full, I make a trip down to the thrift store and drop it off. But the second part of my start, and this kind of developed a lot more of the intentional living, kind of slowing down, the simplifying life became a priority at the end of 2021, or by the time we reached the end of 2021, I was in a really significant state of non-functioning burnout. Non-functioning meaning literally pretty much in bed and at times couldn't even get up. Really just living routine things, doing routine things, you know, not being able to focus. I reached a point where I couldn't even read anymore because I could read the words, but I couldn't comprehend what I was reading. I couldn't retain the information. And I kind of hit a very low point in November of 2021, where it was time to hit that panic button and call in some support and people to kind of help. Kind of lift us out of, well, me in particular, but my husband, we had lots of stuff going on. It was stacks and stacks and stacks of stressful things that keep piling up. And it just got to the point, a literal breaking point where we just couldn't move on anymore. So that led me to really having to make some really significant changes to recover and to get well and to heal. So I had to take some time off. I'm the type of person that if somebody says, oh, did you have a good day today? I do a quick rundown of my to-do list. How many things did I get crossed off it? And I had a good day if there was, you know, a really good number of things crossed off. Being productive was how I established, you know, my good day. And if I wasn't productive enough, it wasn't a good day. So when I'm in burnout, and I'm at the point where I have to literally let everything go. Mm-hmm. And my mandate was, you know, sleep, nap, do nothing. Mm-hmm. Right? Then I also had to then deal with what I call the shoulds. Mm-hmm. I should be doing this. I should be doing that. I should be doing this. And really learning to push that away. And no, it's okay that I'm resting. It's okay. The only creative thing I could really do at that time was crocheting. And I think it's because it's pretty, I don't want to say mundane, but pretty, what's the word? Like everything's the same, you know, you're kind of doing the same, repetitive. So it was pretty easy to focus on. So I was either, you know, napping, watching TV or crocheting. And I have very strict rules about not watching TV during the day. It's a very slippery slope, you know, because I'm productive, right? I get things done. I don't have time to watch TV. So to give myself these permissions to do these things that I'm, in my mind, not supposed to be doing and making them okay was a real shift in thinking. But, of course, I was healing and I was starting to get better. And so the rewards of the slowing down were becoming prevalent and proved necessary. I ended up going back to work just part-time, but it was a very routine kind of job. You know, it's not something I would normally do, but it was something I could go to work and I could come home and I didn't have to think about work when I was at home. And that was really, really important during that healing process. It took about 9 months before I could read a book, before I read a novel. And that, you know, was about 9 months ago. I'm about a year and a half in. I'd say I'm about 90%, you know. But learning to listen to my body, listen to my mind, and tuning in to the cues that it would give me. You know, if I would think about doing something and the thought of it exhausted me, then I knew I had to say no. Then I knew I could go do that, you know, but it was forcing myself to change enough to listen and to say, you know what, I have to say no to that, and I have to say no to that. But I'm to the point now where there's a lot less of that. Very, very rare now. I've got a lot of more energy. You know, I'm creative again. I'm, you know, doing my artwork and my upcycling, right? Like, that's the artwork I like to do, is, you know, taking things from the thrift store and giving them new life. You know, we're just at a point now where, you know, we're gardening. We're brand new gardeners. So I shouldn't say we're gardening. It's April in Canada. We have some seedlings in the kitchen is our gardening right now. But you know, we had to make all these changes and slow down and simplify and just kind of realize that, you know what, if my body says I need to rest right now, then that's what I do. And if it's feeling creative right now, then that's what I do. And, you know, I kind of have my daily goals. I was often, even the other day, I woke up, I'm like, oh, I had all this stuff in my head. I'm like, write it down, right? Get it out of my head. And it was my to-do list, and there must have been 11 things on there. And I was like, oh. And I knew right away, I thought, you know what? It's not happening. That's not happening. Yeah. So what's the priority with the deadline? How far is the deadline? So do you have some space in there? And I did. So I was like, okay, two, what do you really want to work on?
Yeah.
And I was able to kind of pick that and actually get really far with that project, because I picked just the one project to work on that day, as opposed to trying to fit in and how am I going to squeeze this in and that in, you know. So it's really forced me to change my habits and accept that I have limits in my day, and, you know, what gets done gets done. And now it's like, did you have a good day? It's like, well, did I get one thing done? Did I get simple things done? Did I get one kind of, did I get somewhere on a bigger project? But it's no longer, you know, that long to-do list. Oh, I didn't get everything crossed off. No, it was a bad day. You know, yeah. Now I have lots of good days.
Good. Well, see, that's a great journey to be able to go back and capitalize that. And I think people listening to this could probably identify with feeling like somewhere on that scale of motivation or being demotivated, and the spiral of the shoulds, right? When you miss one should and you miss the next should, you're just kind of going down and down and down, right? So to kind of hear that from your perspective is great. A lot of our listeners are focused on repurposing, salvaging, giving new life to things like you talk about. We seem to be focused a lot on the end, kind of like after something's been used to its extent of its lifetime and it's going to be thrown away, we try to find life for it there. But talking to you, I'm seeing that we also need to kind of go back to the purchasing days when we're making a decision on what we need in our home, what we need in our life that brings value to us. That's not clutter. And one thing I remember speaking to you before is you talked about collections. When somebody has a collection of something, whether that's teddy bears or spoons or something, but you were saying something about how people look at a collection and how it's not what we really think a collection is as far as the number. Can you kind of talk about that a little bit? Because I found that interesting.
Yeah. We tend to think of our collections as one thing, because we'll say, I have a collection, right? Which is singular.
Yeah.
And I had a collection of elephant statues that I had from all over the place. I had, you know, we have collections. But when we're in the mindset of reducing and decluttering, minimizing our items, we actually kind of have to take a closer look at our collections. And instead of looking at them as one thing, we look at them as individual items. And I can pretty much guarantee you that of your collection, you still have a favorite or two favorites or however many, you know, and you still are going to have the ones that, well, I don't really like that one, but it's part of the collection, right? I can't get rid of it. It's part of the collection. So if we break that collection down from its singular into the plural that it is, which is a collection of a bunch of different items, you're still able to reduce your collections down to your very favorite things. And there's of course, there's often sentimental value, you know, attached to collections. They might be sentimental value really means that we have memories attached to those items, and so they can be difficult to part with. So then that's where you bring in the repurposing kind of ideas. You know, if it's a collection of, let's say, smaller items, and I know you like this idea of the Christmas ornament, right? Yeah. If you've got a collection of smaller items and you're trying to reduce them down, and you've got the one or two that you're, you know, having troubles parting with, and, you know, nobody's telling you to get rid of your stuff. It's your stuff. Even as a minimalist, we don't get rid of, you know, somebody could walk into my house right now and not even know necessarily right away that we're minimalists because they didn't see our house before, right?
Right.
And so, and we're, you know, I'm going to say we're quite happy with the way it is right now. My husband and I are at different levels of minimalist thinking.
Yeah.
So, you know, for me, it could be, you know, reduced quite a bit more, but I'm at a different space than he is. And so out of, you know, respect for him and my marriage, we compromise, right? So, you know, we probably have a few more things, but back to the point I was trying to make is if we have small things and they're sentimental to us, but we don't really need them out, you know, we don't really need them where we can see them all the time, that's not serving a purpose that way, then I recommend getting the small fillable Christmas ornaments. You can get them at the dollar store. And, you know, you put a little bit of tissue paper or something inside just to make it a backing or to protect it, but you put that item inside there. And then you bring it out at Christmas time, right? It becomes an ornament and it becomes something then you also appreciate more because you don't see it every day. You see it for a certain amount of time. You bring it out, you know, your box of ornaments, you bring it out. And you're like, oh, and then you talk about it. You remember the memory and you hang it up on the tree. But then at the end of the season, you're able to put it away again and you don't have the clutter, you know, that that can come with having a bunch of sentimental items out and about. You know, we're always looking for ways to repurpose those. You know, there are some people don't want to part, say, with their wedding dress or the christening gown or, you know, the someone's passed away and you've still got a closet full of shirts and clothing, you know, from that person. You're having troubles parting with these because these are very strong emotions now that we're talking attached to these. But there's also, at the same time, it doesn't make sense to have the clothes in the closet or the wedding dress in a box in storage or, you know, etc. So if you don't want to part with the items, although sometimes it's helpful to ask yourself certain questions, you know, could somebody else be enjoying these items and using these items as they are? And if that's more of a comforting question for you, a lot of people find it easier to let go of things when they think somebody else could be appreciating them, you know? Yeah. But if that's not a spot where you're at, you might consider, especially with clothing, I mean, they can be made into blankets, you know, quilts, pillows, throw pillows, that kind of thing. They can be repurposed into Christmas ornaments. You know, somebody sew, you know, something into Christmas ornaments or stuffed animals. You can make a teddy bear out of grandpa's shirt. Like there's so many different ways that these items can be repurposed now so that they're not in storage. They're not hanging in a closet, sitting in a box, but you actually have them out. And especially if it's somebody from an older generation, then you could actually have, you know, a quilt made for each child or grandchild, you know, from, you know, your father's shirts or your grandfather's shirts or grandmother's clothing, you know. And then it becomes nice because everybody gets a share in it, but at least it's not just hanging in a closet. What are you going to do with that? You know,
it's gone beyond its purposeful use. And now it's just clutter, unfortunately. Right. And how do we, like, I'm sure there's people listening and they're They have that junk drawer in the kitchen, which you can hardly get open because there's always something blocking the door from opening because it's full of stuff. There's you a couple elastic of bands, right? There's some dice from a game, a couple puzzle pieces. You don't know where the puzzle is. You know, there's all this stuff, right? Just thrown in there or in the basement or downstairs or somewhere in your home. There's a storage closet. And when you open it, everything tumbles down on your head. And you're like, what is even in here? I don't even know. I never opened this door. And, you know, that's the kind of stuff maybe to start. But, okay, the one thing I think, though, is that when we have clutter is we don't know where to start. And it's overwhelming because we see everything. We see the whole package and go, you know, Suzanne, I don't even know what to start. Where did you guys start? How did you kind of decide? And how did you keep yourself from being overwhelmed by the sheer mass of stuff in your home?
Yeah. So there's kind of several ideas around starting and then also for that overwhelm, kind of preventing that overwhelm. And as much as before, I was already talking about sentimental items, that's actually not where you start. That's where you end. You're minimizing is like building a habit and you're kind of building a muscle and it kind of takes practice. So you start with really easy stuff, right? You might start even with just carrying a box around your house and whatever you instantly see that you don't need, it easy goes in the box, right? Yep. Oh, I don't need that. That can be a very quick way to start. I usually recommend, though, that you want to start in a place that's open, where you see it all the time.
Okay.
Flat surface, so your dining room table, if you haven't seen that in a while, that's a really good place to start. Your end tables in your living room. One of my favorite rooms to start is actually whichever entrance you use, whether it's your front door entrance or if you come in from your garage or back door, whichever entrance you use all the time, clean that area, clear out that space, because every time you walk into your house, it's an endorphin hit of, wow, I love this space. Mm-hmm. And that feeling never goes away. You actually never get used, it never gets mundane. Every time you walk into a cleared out space that has lots of room, I have room to breathe. That's always kind of how I describe it. It is literally like a breath of fresh air.
Yeah.
So I always recommend starting in your front entrance. But make sure you start in an open space. If it's not there, make it your living room, dining room, your kitchen, somewhere, because it's very motivating to walk into a space that's cleared. So you don't want to start in your basement. You don't want to start in a closet. You want to start somewhere, your kitchen counters, your dining room table, your end tables in your living room or your coffee table, shelving, right? That's open shelf, your bookshelves, that's where you want to start because it's very motivating. The other way to keep it from getting overwhelming, though, is you just take very small bite-sized pieces of the project you're working on.
Mm-hmm.
So that might be a single shelf. If you're looking at a whole bookshelf, don't do the whole bookshelf.
Yeah.
You start with this shelf and then you move to that shelf.
Yeah.
One of the reasons for that too is that we live busy lives and it might be in our best intentions to say, I'm going to spend all day Saturday cleaning and minimizing, right? Something's going to come up. Plans are going to change. You're going to get interrupted. You got to go run an errand, something. And if you have taken everything off of your bookshelf and it's sitting all over your living room floor and now you got interrupted, it's really hard to get back to that project. Mm-hmm. Or you end up just taking everything and now you've just shoved it out of the way back onto those shelves because you have to go take care of something else. And now it's even worse than it was when you started because you've lost all the motivation. There's frustration involved, you know. So always, always, always small bite-sized pieces. If you're going to do your kitchen, it's one drawer. at a time.
Yeah.
You know, it's one cupboard at a time. And sometimes there's reorganization needed to make things run more smoothly, like especially in a kitchen, you might find that you need to swap this cupboard with that cupboard, the stuff, you know, because that'll work better. It'll make more sense. So that's fine. But then you declutter this area, declutter that area. Now you're swapping.
Good.
Right?
Yeah,
you always want to leave it so that if I get interrupted, this isn't a big deal. Right. You know, break them into very small bites. And then that way it also, you know, if you on my website, I've got a gallery page, but I've got before and after pictures. And some of them are 5 minutes, 10 minutes. This is what you can do in 10 minutes. I think I wrote a blog post about that as well, actually. Yes. You know, but pick just one end table in your living room, you know, and now for me, that was a 5 minute job. You know, for somebody else, that might be a big job, but you know, it's 10 minutes, set your timer, 10 minutes. That's it. That's all I'm spending.
Yeah.
But if you spend 10 minutes every day, well, within 5 days, that's an hour.
Yeah.
Right? Did I exactly. do that math right? Yeah. five days, that's an hour. Yeah. And, you know, it's an hour that you wouldn't have spent if you had a whole hour. Like you're an hour ahead, right? Rather than being overwhelmed and saying that you're not going to do it at all. You'd be amazed at what you can get done in 10 and 15 minutes.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to be every day, 10 or 15 minutes at a time, you know, as you feel motivated. It all adds up. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And the other thing that goes, I guess, hand in hand with that is purchasing decisions going forward and not bringing new clutter in to fill up the space we just made space for, right? So there's a little bit of a discipline that needs to be learned when you're standing at the store and you have your money in your hand or your debit card and you're like, oh, look at the thing. I need the thing. I need the latest thing. Holidays are all about gifting. Birthday parties are about gifting. Weddings are about more gifts, more clutter, more stuff. I got 10 toasters when I got married. You know, like, what am I going to do with 10 toasters, right? So it seems like it's part of our social fabric to gift and to give to people. Any suggestions on smart gifts that don't add clutter to our life that we can suggest?
Yes, definitely. My favorite kind of looking for gift ideas now is experiences. So can I get tickets to a game, a concert, a theater show? Can I get a membership to something, you know, monthly membership to that somebody would appreciate, whatever that might be? I try to, like even for my mom at Christmas, we were trying to come up with different ideas. And I was like, you know what? Why don't we just in January give her a certificate at Christmas time, right? That I made, right? A coupon kind of thing. I said, but on it says that we'll treat you to lunch and a game of mini golf in January, right? At the Golf Dome, because Winnipeg has an indoor mini golf.
Yes.
And it was so funny because, you know, kind of open, I could tell right away. I thought, gosh, we have never gone mini golfing, like, you know, together. It was not something we did, but I thought it's different. And I could tell when she opened it, she was like, oh. Like, okay, thanks, you know. Yeah. And when we planned to go mini golfing, she was still like, mini golfing, eh? And I'm like, yeah, it's okay, don't worry, you know, it'll be fine. And we got there, and after the first trip, this is way more fun than I thought it was gonna be,
right?
Like, she had a blast, right? She had a blast, and it was something that was so fun. And now we're planning this summer to go to one of the outdoor mini golf places because, she's all into mini golfing. But it's kind of just thinking outside the box, right? So we've got, you know, we've got pictures of that, and her response to it was so hilarious, you know, that that it creates that memory, right? Which is way more fun than giving her something that she's going to stick in a cupboard or, you know, and who knows if she's going to use it, and she might end up regifting it to someone else, which is fine. It's fine to regift, by the way, everybody. Yeah. It's fine to regift.
Yeah, let's do that. Exactly.
You know, it's okay. You can regift stuff. It's fine. But yeah, we're always looking for the experience, memory making. You know, can we do something a little different that's not adding? But of course, if it's also very helpful, though, for the people that are buying gifts for you, because how often does it happen? What do you want for Christmas? I don't know. Right?
Yeah.
We're all adults. We all buy what we need, when we need, as we need it. So, you know, what do you want for Christmas? I don't know. But if you actually think of something, keep yourself a little list so that when somebody says, what do you want for Christmas? You say, actually, you know what? I have some ideas. And actually tell them stuff that you actually want. Yeah. So that way, or could use, right?
Yeah.
That way you are getting not just stuff. You're getting something that you can actually utilize, use in your home, would appreciate, you know. So help out the people that are gifting to you, and then in turn, encourage them to do the same. You know, like it could be, give me a list of three things. You're not going to get all three things. So there's still an element of surprise. You don't know which one you're getting, but at least you know what you're getting is going to be useful. Another idea and is whatever comes in, and this could be not just gifting, but this could be for your own shopping habits kind of ideas. Whatever, because you spent all this time clearing the stuff out of your house, and you're right, the last thing you want is to start just going, oh, I have space, and filling it up again, right?
Yeah.
Part of the clearing it out, actually, for me anyway, was a huge eye-opener in where we were wasting money, right?
Yeah.
It was like, because part of it is, I can't believe how much money is wasted going out the door, and there's sometimes a little guilt attached to that, right? Where it's like, oh, I spent all this money, and it's going out the door, and I'm just getting rid of it, and maybe I should be doing something else. You know, these thoughts. The money is spent. That money is not coming back. So it doesn't matter at this point that it's just going out the door. Somebody else will use it. But you learn that lesson going forward. And I actually found it was, for me, almost automatic to start second guessing anything I saw that I wanted. Why do I need it? Is it serving a purpose? Is it just a frivolous thing? You know, you start automatically asking yourself these questions. Try to wait. If you see something you want, can you wait 48 hours before making that purchase?
Yeah.
Because sometimes just walking away from it is enough to that you've lost interest. 48 hours later, you forgot that you even saw it, you know? Something that also has worked for me really well. And I think it works for me because, you know, once you pass 45, you know, somebody in their 20s, this isn't going to work for so much. But I ask myself, I've gone this long in my life without it. Do I really need this now? Is this really going to, what is this going to do for me? And that question alone probably leaves 90% of the stuff on the shelf, you know, for me now. It's, you know, it's really, I don't need that. You know, I don't need it. What do I need it for? What do I have at home already that I can use instead?
Right. Yeah. You think when we think this way at the beginning, it's going to really help us at the end. Again, where we focus on upcycling, we're trying to extend the life of something beyond its purpose. And all these people that are minimizing and bringing things and trying to donate and get rid of things, that's usually where my wife and I come in, because now we're going to take this item that's no longer usable in its current form and extend it by making something different out of it. So we all need a shelf in our house, or we need something to put our keys on or whatever, or some organization tools. So maybe I can take that thing is no longer used and make it into an organizational tool that benefits you and it doesn't go to waste. But if we can really kind of rewind, like we talk about back to the beginning, there'll be less things for us to repurpose, because we're all thinking better at the beginning stages and not creating this mass problem at the end where we're like, what are we going to do with all this stuff? Because we're living life with purpose earlier on. And like, I know I can do a walk around my house, and my wife tells me you have a lot of things to think about here. So I'm following it. I really like what you're saying.
Yeah. And I think you're right. I think not necessarily across the board, but when you think of what the younger generation, my kids are in their, you know, mid-20s, and when I look at the kind of possessions that they have and want and they collect and that compared to the baby boomers, who, you know, and the older generation, especially those that were also experienced the 30s, right, when they went through the Depression. And that kind of, they came through the Depression, and then it was like, oh, now we can have stuff. So they got stuff and stuff and stuff and stuff and stuff. And now, you know, our generation is now dealing with, as our parents pass away or have to downsize into a home or into a condo, even whatever, they're downsizing. Their houses are full.
Yeah.
And we don't want it. And the grandkids don't want it. You know, I have a box of my mom's crystal in the basement because she didn't want to part with it. Because I remember as a kid, her collecting the crystal. And I don't know, I was a kid, I don't know how much it was, but I do know it was expensive, right? Yeah. Collecting crystal was expensive. And she has a complete set. Anybody wants crystal, let me know. She has a complete set of crystal. And when she downsized into her apartment, she just didn't have the heart to part with this crystal. Mm-hmm. And I don't want it. My sister doesn't want it. And what are we going to do? And I looked it up on eBay and I'm like, Mom, it's worth like a buck of glass, maybe. Right? It's not worth. Yeah. Nobody wants it. So I said, I don't know. What do you want to do? And she was like, I can't part with it. So I do have a box of crystal in my basement that's waiting until we get a generation that wants it again. But I mean, who knows what's going to happen, right? It's so there are the things that we kind of get stuck with, you know. But I think you're right, the younger generation isn't interested in having two sets of dishes and two sets of glasses and the good silver. I mean, we just have a set of dishes.
Yeah.
Our company comes over, you get what we use every day. Like that's, you know, it's good enough. And, you know, we don't have to have all the duplicates and all the extra stuff and all the, you know, I think we're automatically kind of lightening what we have, but it's still amazing at what we think we need. Like it's very expensive to keep up with the Joneses.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's very expensive to kind of think that it's easy to make up that we need something, you know? And if you think about, well, what do I already have that could serve this purpose, right? Chances are we already have something that would suffice. I think I lost my train of thought because I was thinking back to gifting when we receive gifts and stuff, that whatever comes in, and this goes for your own shopping as well, but let's say you minimized your games, board games and all that down to just what you need. As an example, if you go out and you see this really great board game, you just have it, and you know that you're going to love it, that's fine. Which game at home are you going to get rid of then?
Yeah, exactly.
Right? Yeah. That's how you prevent the recluttering of the areas that you've decluttered.
Yeah, makes sense.
Yeah, and that works really well with kids as well. If you're decluttering with kids, you know, I really want this toy. I really want this toy. Okay, well, you already have 50 Hot Wheels at home. If you buy this Hot Wheel, maybe you need to get rid of two.
Yeah, right? There you go. Right.
And you know, and working with kids, of course, it takes a little time to get them on board with your ideas. There, you lead by example. But yeah. It's a really good way to keep from refilling our homes. You know, if you're like, I bring something in, something's got to go.
Yeah.
It's a really good rule of thumb.
I think we just sent somebody scurrying into the basement to hide their Hot Wheels collection.
Yeah.
As we mentioned that, they're like, oh no, it's only one collection. Please. It's only one collection, right? It's only
that's
one.
Right.
Yeah.
Just one.
So the one thing I saw when we talked originally was, you talked about going out and finding things and repurposing them, which is what the Upcycle Canada podcast is about. Yeah. And you showed me some frying pans you turned into clocks. And I thought that was such a great thing. We'll have links in the show notes to your Instagram page so people can see them. But what was the idea about repurposing that got you on that path to not only declutter your home, but find life for something that probably wasn't going to be used for what it was.
Yeah, it's kind of a funny thing because I kind of joke that, you know, crafting and being a maker and an artist and decluttering and being a minimalist do not go together. And so for a while, actually, when I started minimizing and I kind of felt that there wasn't room anymore for crafting and artwork and, and that, at least not to the extent that I was doing it. And so for a while, I kind of stopped. I got together with a friend once a while. We would have a paint day. So, you know, I'd make a painting or, you know, I've always kind of crocheted. It's what I do when I watch TV in the evening. But it became, what am I going to do with this stuff? And I'm not cluttering up my own house with it. And for me, it's more about the act of being creative than it is about being attached and keeping what I make. I enjoy the process more than I necessarily am concerned about keeping it, right? So like I love it if I'm crocheting and someone's like, oh, can you make this? And it's, yay, I can crochet it, out it goes, right? I know that it's going to somebody who wants it, right? But I'm also very creative, and that part of me needs to create. It needs to be fed. So I realized that I was going to have to find a way to be creative and be a minimalist as well. And my answer to that was, well, you don't have to be a minimalist everywhere. That's okay. But what I'm creating, I consider very carefully the resale ability of what I'm making.
Yeah.
And then I go to craft sales and, you know, Christmas craft sales. We actually did this for the first time last year. We did a Christmas craft sale. We did extremely well because I'm also kind of make a few of something and then I move on to something else and I make a few of that. So there's not a whole lot of, we had a whole variety of stuff available on the table, but only a few of each thing. So if you wanted it, it was like, well, there's only one, you know, there's only two, there's only this. So that kind of worked in our favor. And so I thought, as long as I kind of keep in mind, will somebody want to buy this? Or do I think somebody will want to buy this? Then I feel free to go ahead and create all I want around that. For me, my creations then are able to go out into the world and be there and not be in my home. You know, if I make something that I really like, you know, my paintings, I'm a very amateur painter. So, you know, those I don't actually sell my paintings. But I made a gallery wall in one of our hallways and I've got probably 10 nails up there and I switch it out, you know, and but if there's pieces I don't like, I let them go. It's okay.
Yeah.
It's okay.
It's okay.
You know,
I can see people talking themselves. It's okay.
You know, it's okay. And that's exactly what it is. You do, you talk yourself into it or out of it. But, you know, if this painting, if I never hang it up on the gallery wall because I don't like it enough to put it there, I can let it go. I can either take the time to paint it white and paint something else over it, which, you know, can only be done once or twice, and then, you know, it's all textured. It doesn't always work. That's kind of a practicing thing. It's better to curve me down a new canvas, but you know what I mean? Like, it's, you know, it's okay. I let it go. I don't keep every single thing that I've ever painted. If I don't like it, it's practice, right? That's what I'm doing. It's practice. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so, part of what I also decided to do though is that if I was going to be creative in that, I'm very strong in the message of being earth friendly as much as we can. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted whatever I create to have some element of upcycling to it. Mm-hmm. And I'm pretty addicted to Pinterest and looking for ideas. And I think I saw a picture of a frying pan clock and I was like, oh my gosh. Because you know, getting those Teflon frying pans out of people's kitchens is so important, right? And I thought this way, they look so cool. And at least I think so, obviously, they look so cool. And they serve a purpose. You know, it's not just ornamental. It's something that you're going to use. It's something, you know, I've had all kinds of things. I was very excited about the idea. And I'm able to go to the thrift stores and pick these things up. And thank goodness nobody's using all that scratch Teflon now, you know, and I'm covering it with paint and whatever. So I feel like I'm in the world of service.
Like a superhero.
Yeah. Removing that, you know, those light pans that can hang on your wall quite easily. So that's my current project that I'm really excited about, interested in. I've made quite a few of them, and, you know, people are excited about them. They really like them.
So. Great. And again, people can go to the links in the show notes and go see pictures of them and check them out, and make sure you give a little hearts and likes and follow as well and share that out. That's amazing. So, there's one thing coming up before we go that you're planning, and you're going to get into people's kitchens virtually. You're not going to break into our house physically, which is unnerving. But you're going to do something virtually in our kitchens in May. Can you talk a little bit about this? Because the podcast will be out in time for this, and I would love people to interact and be a part of this. Talk about that.
Yeah, and I really appreciate the opportunity to talk about it. I have partnered up with a friend of mine, Elizabeth Cancade from Living Simply Kitchen. Elizabeth is a culinary nutrition guide and a holistic chef. And then I'm also a culinary nutrition guide as well. And my intentional living experience is coming into it. But we are trying to help people who have health goals set their kitchens up for success. So we're going to be going through the pantries, the fridge, and the fridges. This is very food focused. It's being done over Zoom, so you're in the comfort of your own home, but it's actively participation, you know, kind of workshop where you'll actually be going through your pantry and your fridge and your freezers. And of course, the people here are wanting to better themselves, so there's no judgment. Don't worry about what's already in there. That's okay. If it was already fixed, you wouldn't be interested in the workshop. So, you know, don't worry about that. But we're doing it over two mornings, May 6th and 13th, 10 a.m. Central Time, about an hour and a half each day. And I'll send you a link for how to register and all the information. But yeah, if you're looking to improve your kitchen and looking to get more healthy, and you hear about all these, you know, wonderful healthy foods and have no idea how to use them, we're going to be talking about how to swap out ingredients, how to improve, but also meeting your goals where you're at. We're starting the workshop with your goals, not our goals, your goals, and then helping you achieve that in your kitchen.
There you go. Okay. So Suzanne, where else can we follow you? Let's talk about the website. We'll have links in the show notes, but just so people can hear it as well. Where are you most active, and talk a little bit about the website as well?
Yeah. So I'm most active as a blogger. So definitely check out my website, and you follow my blog there would be great. I have a regular newsletter that goes out, and I make sure the information in my newsletter is different than what I post online elsewhere. That also includes a free recipe. I send that out every other week or so.
Nice.
And then I'm super active on Instagram. You can find me on Facebook. And I recently started a YouTube channel, kind of breaking into a little video here and see how that goes.
And we can find you lurking on Pinterest probably too then, right?
And actually that's right. I just started my own Pinterest account. That's right, like yesterday. So
there you go.
Yeah.
Good timing.
Yeah. So you can find me on Pinterest as well.
Awesome. Okay, Suzanne, thank you so much for being part of the Upcycle Canada family and being on the podcast. I'm really excited to have you here. And I love how you really unpacked the whole thing about a collection being more than one item. I think that's gonna strike a chord with many, many people, including my wife, who'll be like, I told you. So thank you for doing that. I've got some interesting conversations ahead for me personally, but as well that we can reduce the amount that we are putting out into the world of unused items by being more thoughtful at the beginning of the process and thinking about our purchases and what do we really need in our home I love your approach to this, and it's very helpful. So I really appreciate you being part of the podcast.
Thank you very much. I really love being here.
Awesome. It was really great to have you on the show.
Thank you.
All right, everybody, please go do all the likes, the follows, and all that great stuff and support Suzanne. And if you're interested in the virtual kitchen clean out, that'll be really fun to watch. That'll be May 6th and 13th. We'll have links in the show notes for you to be part of that. And if it goes really well, make sure you let Suzanne know that you want more of these and maybe more in the future, right?
Definitely.
Awesome. Thanks for being part of the podcast.
Thank you.
This has been the Upcycle Canada podcast. Thanks for listening today. We appreciate your feedback and would love to connect with you. Email your questions, comments, or suggestions to upcyclecanadapodcast@gmail.com. To find out more about our business and access links to all our social media sites, podcast notes, and more, please visit upcyclecanada.ca. A review of this episode on the podcast app of your choice is always appreciated. Please help us build this community by sharing our podcast with your family and friends. Our thanks to Jacob Moon for the instrumental backing track used in this podcast. Please visit jacobmoon.com for more on this talented Canadian artist. Join us again for more great topics, ideas, and practical steps to help you in your daily life. Thank you for listening. Let's keep this conversation going.
Hey, this is Dave. You're like, what's this music? I thought the podcast was over. Well, it is. This is actually an ad. Oh, you're like an ad. But this is different. This is for another podcast called, ready? Dad Space. Dad Space is a podcast created for dads by dads. Head over to dadspace.ca for all the information. And we would love, if you know a dad, if you are a dad, if you've ever had a dad, if you know a new dad, a current dad, an empty nest dad, we have a podcast just for dads. And I'd love to share it with you and to share it with a special dad in your life. dadspace.ca. Thank you for listening to the podcast you've already been listening to. But if you want a little bit more podcasting greatness, check out dadspace.ca, dadspace.ca, for all the goodness for your favorite dad. Aww. It's like a Father's Day present every day. We'll see you over at dadspace.ca. Thanks for listening to all of our podcasts, and we'll talk soon. This is Dave, and I'll meet you at dadspace.ca. Cheers. And now we dance.